This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
I would never want to concern with 100 people working for me, but I would love to do the biggest projects in the world. It costs a lot to do these tests and have all these people working on it. So 300,000 is nothing for an innovation project. You probably have that as well. If you have a lot of experience, you become very confident about what you do.
In today's episode, we sit down with Sarah Schulter, a creative strategy consultant who helps artists and designers bring their ambitious projects to life. She opens up about her journey of self-discovery, why art and fashion are her biggest inspirations, and how strategic thinking helps creators find their voice. Get ready to dive into her story and learn how positioning, branding, and marketing can unlock artistic potential. Good day, Sarah. Welcome in the podcast.
Yes, thank you.
How are you doing?
Very good.
How's life treating you at the moment?
Life is treating me very good at the moment, actually.
Why?
Because I think I have everything I could wish for. I have a good family life. I have a good work life.
Wow.
I have a good life for myself.
I see a huge smile on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for you.
Yeah. No, I can't complain.
Today we're sitting in my place.
Rotterdam South.
Rotterdam South, yes. It's your city, I noticed in the research. But can you describe a little bit where you normally are with work?
Well, I live in Rotterdam again. I moved from Amsterdam a while ago back to Rotterdam, where I'm from. And I live in Koolhaven. It's not far from here, but it's a very different part of the city. And I work from home. I work same as you for myself. And I'm in Amsterdam a lot still because a lot of clients for me are in Amsterdam. But I don't have an office or a studio where I always am. So I work from different places.
In 2015, you said Amsterdam for now, but Rotterdam for always.
Yeah. In Dutch, it sounds better even.
Yes, it does.
No, but Rotterdam is my city. It's who I am. It's
how so?
Because it just fits me. I think my whole personality, my identity, it fits with Rotterdam personality. It's raw, direct.
You strike me as quite direct.
Yeah. I'm like much more in my personality. I love Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy that I live there as well. But for me, it's always Rotterdam.
Yeah. And your family is also from here?
Yeah. Yeah, my whole family lives here. Or not my whole family, but a lot of family members are here. So, yeah.
Why did you go to Amsterdam?
Because of work. And I lived in London for a little bit. And then I came back to Rotterdam. And it is small here in some way. It's not like London or Paris or, and then I wanted more also. I wanted to explore. And then I got a job in Amsterdam and I already had a lot of friends that lived there. So I moved there and I'm very happy I did because I changed a lot, I think, in Amsterdam, especially in my, how I am in work.
Can you describe a little bit? Can you give an example?
Yeah, I was actually having this conversation with somebody else as well. So maybe I have an example is that when I moved to Amsterdam, started working there, somebody asked me, work relation, hey, do you want to have a cup of coffee somewhere? I was like, why? You know, I don't see any direct business we have. You don't have a question for me. Why would we just do that? In Rotterdam, you would never do that. Like, okay, but I want to have a coffee with you, but you need to have a question or we need to have a sort of goal for that coffee. And then when I lived there, I found out how they sort of do business in Amsterdam. And it's much more, oh, let's see what we can do. And maybe in the future, something this will happen from this, and let's just meet each other. It's much more how it works in New York or Paris. And I think that way of, that style of working, I like as well a lot. And I think in Rotterdam is very different.
Did it take a lot to adapt?
A little bit. But you also just get used to it soon. And yeah, it's also much more companies, brands, businesses are in Amsterdam and are focused on Amsterdam as a city.
And basically why I asked you for the podcast is because we have a similar career path.
Yeah.
And if there, if, and so I can relate quite a bit. In personality, we're probably quite different. But what I loved throughout the years that I followed you is that you're so much going from comfort zone to the outer zones, back, grow, the diversity that you adapt to, it's unbelievable. And if I see where you worked, and maybe you want to, after the question, describe a little bit what you did, because you went to London, Paris, Rotterdam, Amsterdam, for Studio Drift, you traveled the world, for Rozengaarden. It's, wow, well done.
Yeah, no, it's been
a journey.
Fun journey, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Can you describe a little bit, maybe from the beginning, what you did? Because back in the days, you went to London first.
Yeah, I went to London for there. I worked for a gallery for a little bit, and I think that's because I fucked up in school a little bit, and then I didn't know what to do, and I don't even know how I got to be with this gallery, but then I started to work in art from that. And then when I got back in Rotterdam, I through my cousin, I started working for a fashion designer who's more an artist called Marga Wijmans. She's from Rotterdam, also in the south, her studio was. And she's a super interesting creative, I think. She also, that time it was going well. She would do shows in Paris, but also for the Groninger Museum bought her work. So it was a very good time to work with her. And she has a lot of knowledge about fashion, but also about design and art. So it was a very fun experience to work with her. Also intense because, you know, these artists are always intense, and also the projects you do are usually intense because it's always difficult. And
what is difficult?
Yeah, it's
so the deadlines or
deadlines, impossible projects usually, right? You notice as well, it's always something that everybody else thinks, well, you cannot do. I remember we went to Aruba once with Marga for fashion week, but we only had 2 months to prepare. Nothing was ready when we had to go already in the plane to Aruba. So she had to sew everything in the hotel room still with help from people we didn't even know from there. And that's usually how it goes.
I'm not even surprised.
No. So it, with Marga, it was...
But in the end, you pulled it off.
We pulled it off. Yes. You always pull it off.
Yes.
And that's also fun, you know? It creates the excitement. And so I think with Marga was sort of defining for my career in the end, because I did some other projects after that. I worked with a Dutch woman, Manon Schaap, in Paris for a fashion brand there, and on styling and identity, which was very fun. I worked for some other fashion designers in Holland. I worked for a gallery in Amsterdam, Witsehausen Gallery, also a very interesting guy, Jacob Witsehausen. And then I started working for a marketing agency in Amsterdam. That's when I moved to Amsterdam. And a marketing agency was very different because it's working with big brands.
Ivy Lee,
yeah. And so...
Why did you go there?
because I knew the founder very well, Leroy Asnam. He's still a good friend of mine. And he started working with Converse.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Converse marketing campaign was very related to art. So that's where Leroy thought that I would be a good match. And then I started working for the agency. It was very fun because I had no idea how these big brands and corporate offices work.
It's a huge difference.
It's very different.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I'm so curious why you made the transition.
Yeah. Also, when I started having these conversations with Leroy about working there, I really wanted to experience how it was working with a big company, just to see how that goes.
What did you learn?
That I never want to work for a company, but also how much more how you can work with a certain structure and just simple things, you know, how you make a deck, how you do a presentation, how you communicate in a corporate world, or even how these, because still with our work, we work with a lot of brands, right? Or with a lot of corporates. And then it's nice to know how these companies work from within, that you know that if you ask somebody a question, you're not going to have an answer right away because it has to go through seven layers before you get that answer. And I think if you don't experience how that works internally, you have no idea.
What did it do to you when you noticed that it takes a little while to get an answer?
Yeah, it's just from that experience, you know how it goes, but it wouldn't be something that I can easily adapt to, I think. I also see why it's necessary, because it's completely different when you work in a company with thousands of people. There needs to be some sort of structure in that. But I also realized that that wouldn't be something for me.
And after Ivy Lee, you thought, let's go back to artists.
Yeah.
To Studio Rozengaarden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then I...
And Rotterdam.
And Rotterdam. And I still lived in Amsterdam, so the travel was not easy. But then I found out that for some reason, it's always through my cousin. She also...
Who's your cousin?
Yeah, her name is Miriam. She lives in Amsterdam as well. But she always, for some reason, she's not in the same field as I am in at all. But she also always sees or knows somebody for me to work with. So she also referred me to Dan. And then I started working for Rozengaarden.
Yeah. What did you learn there? Because that's way different than Ivy Lee and all the places that you worked, maybe?
Yeah, way different. But for when I started working for Daan, we did the project at the Afsluitdijk, which was a massive project with Rijkswaterstaat. And Rijkswaterstaat in bureaucracy is worse than any big brand. So I think it was nice that I also already had a taste of how it is to work with these larger companies. But
meant to be.
Yeah.
Because you don't always get a project like Afsluitdijk.
No, it was massive project.
Was it easy? Well, easy is not the correct word, but was it handleable to oversee the whole campaign in communications and PR wise? Because there's so much attention and such a high level.
Yeah.
Going to the New York Times, to small ones.
Yeah, it was, I think.
How do you do it?
How do you do it? Well, it was nice, I think, that there was already a lot of attention. And with Dan, usually the projects have a very clear explanation for press. There's always a story, right? Sometimes it's difficult as a journalist to write about an artwork because but with Dan, there's always a larger story to it.
And so it was an iconic piece,
It was 13 million. There was a lot of critique about it because it was such an expensive project, so of course there's always
there was enough to talk about.
There was enough to talk about. So I think press wise, that you have to do it. And there was with Rijkswaterstaat, I think, a lot of friction, to say it nicely, because we just, with how we work for a studio like Rozengaarde, is very quick. And if you want something, you just go for it. You know, you want that article in New York Times, or you want to have a certain person there, or you want to have your pictures in a way, you just do it. And but with Rijkswaterstaat, you need 13 meetings to communicate it with each other, see who's approaching who, and it is very different. So I think that's where the difficulty was, the communication with all these stakeholders in the project. But no, the hard part, I think, with the Afsluitdijk was more the projects, because it's always innovation, so it's just hard to get something ready in time. But yeah.
But I also believe that they had someone like you who was an absolute go-getter.
Yeah. But we had everyone that worked for Daan was a go-getter, because I think he's very good in selecting who he works with. Well, you as well. So, but we had Marianne, who is super good PR manager, and she knew all the international press, wallpaper. Daan also knew them, of course. And yeah, with Daan, everybody just knew that sky's the limit, you know? You can achieve everything if you just go for it. And that sounds a little bit corny, but it was really like that. You just do it.
Did you grow there the most of all the places that you were?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Can you give an example of one of the most valuable personal traits that you improved? For instance, dealing with stress, or collaborating with teammates, or
I think probably creative solutions to every problem, because that's where Daan was so good at. I think Daan is a creative, but he's also a businessman and a marketing man, a salesman. You know, he's very good at that, and because he always thinks further and comes to creative solutions for things. So, for example, if there's, I don't know how to explain this in a short way, but we had a big project once, and then there's budget for the work, and usually people think it's a lot of budget, but in innovation, it's just very, well, you know this as well, right? It costs a lot to do these tests and have all these people working on it. So 300,000 is nothing for an innovation project, because there's a lot of costs. And but then we needed more budget, and then Daan said, well, but we can use, I have to think how to explain this. It was in a hall, a big work, and then he said, well, usually an artist doesn't have to provide their own frame, you know, so we just call everything around the work, which was usually also within that budget, we just call it a frame, and then we can put it outside our budget, you know. And I thought, it's just a smart way of doing business.
Yes.
With or
a lot of stories pop up in my mind.
Right, but that was where he was very good at. Or
absolutely.
When you say, yeah, this with this work or with this invention, we can get a certain amount of how to say that? Neutral energy or whatever, and you just give it a number, and then Daan would say, well, that doesn't say anything to people, you just have to say 50 households, and then it resonates with people. I think in this storytelling I learned so much from him.
And then you went to Studio Drift, Amsterdam. less traffic.
Yeah.
How was this?
Studio Drift was amazing because I think I was always very lucky with the projects for the studios I work with. With Dan, we had China project and Afterdijk. And then when I started working for Drift, there was the solo exhibition at Stedelijk Museum. Mm. And then we did a drone performance in Amsterdam.
Yes, I was quite jealous.
Yeah, it couldn't be better, you know?
On the record.
Yeah. No, it was...
But I was super happy for you.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So you went to Studio Drift and you worked there as a director of communications.
Yeah.
You had so much experience already.
Yeah.
How did you bundle it all together? And how did you approach these projects being now more in a lead position?
I think my experience with Dan helped a lot because also the projects that we wanted to do with Studio Drift were very experience based, like the drone performances. It's not a private commission; it's art for a public, and that's what I was used to with Dan as well. And then the work from Drift is very different. But marketing strategy-wise, you can use a lot of the same tactics. And yeah, it was with Drift very interesting. Rolf and Lonneke from Drift, they are also very motivated themselves in communicating their work and getting it out there, get the public to see it. So that's always nice to work with artists that, you know, support you in what you have to do and work, collaborate together with you. Mm-hmm. And it was a very cool team with Studio Drift that we work with. When I started, it was about 8 people. And when I left, I think they had 50 or more people working there. Yeah.
50? Yeah. 50?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a huge studio. A lot of research and development is done there. A lot of production work is done there. But yeah, we went... they worked with Pace Gallery already, so that was also super interesting because then Pace started Superblue, which was a company also for experience art. They had James Turrell and JR and then Studio Drift. And then you also get to see how these big blue chip galleries like Pace work, of course. So that was very nice. And Drift had exhibitions all over the world. And
wow.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah. It was just activating what was already there.
Did you feel like homecoming, that you were in a position that everything you are and stood for and the freedom that you got, that you could finally excel and find your path?
Yeah. I didn't think of it before, but yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because you stayed there 5 years.
Yeah.
What... During that time, were there things that you thought like, okay, I'm doing these projects and that's business and I'm super happy about it. But did you also had like a second path, more thinking about yourself, like who am I? What do I want to learn in this period? What's next?
Yeah, for sure. Because when I did communication, marketing or whatever you call it, strategy, business development, it's all a little bit... similar, right? You're working towards the same goals. And I also did project management. But there are some things that I love about it and some things that I don't like about it, of course. And with Drift, in the beginning, it was just me. So then you also do social media and I do PR. But I realized that's not the things that I like the most. So I got the opportunity to hire other people for that, which was really nice. And I realized that I also like to manage a team. And with Drift, we had the possibilities for that because the team grew massively.
How many people did you have directly?
Social media and a PR person.
Nice.
And an intern usually.
How do you communicate this when you start at Studio Drift and you of course you do everything that is needed, but at a certain moment you feel that you don't really like it and you want to do different stuff? Or How do you communicate this to the partners of a student drift? What tips do you have for other people who experience it?
Well, just talk about it a lot, I think. And we, I was also again lucky that the projects, there was so much. So it was just, the work was too much.
Mm.
So then you have the opportunity to,
lucky you.
Yeah. So then there's the opportunity to have more people in the team. And then you can see where you would like extra support. And I think what I also realized during my time at Drift, that it also helps to speak about what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't say it, nobody knows it. And I think this is just something also you learn from experience. And when you have the confidence in what you do, that you can say, okay, but I want to move more in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say it, it's all of a sudden, it's a thing, right?
How well are you in expressing your boundaries?
I'm pretty good in expressing my boundaries.
Keeping them?
But keeping them, not so much. But I think that's also part of the job, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of both, maybe.
Yeah.
How well are you in protecting your mental and physical health? Maybe that's a...
Yeah.
Better.
I think I'm pretty good at it because maybe it's a little personal and it's a very long explanation, but I had a lot of mental health problems when I was younger, from 16 until 21. But because I had them so early in my life, I think I also know how to deal with it very well. So I think a lot of our generation, the mental health problems start when they're our age or when you are already in your career and you're a little bit older, and you just need to find a way to deal with it, the stress and the... But I already learned this from a very young age, and it helped me, I think, in my professional life.
I don't feel the need to know what happened between 16 and 21.
Yeah.
But... What lessons can you share with others who are listening? Say, oh, okay, Sarah already had it. I'm very much listening to how can I cope with this?
Yeah, I think what I learned the most was when I started getting professional help. Then I first we tried everything to make it go away, whatever it is, you know, your mental state, and but I think with a lot of people, it doesn't go away. Mm. It's just there. And then when I realized, okay, it's not something that I need to try to make go away. It's just something you need to live with. And it's part of your life. And you just need to cope with it, move on. And then you realize, okay, it goes away by itself.
But not ignore it.
Not ignore it. And I think, and also... you know, practical things. If you don't feel well, go back to routine sport in the morning, make sure your house is clean, like simple things, but it helps. Just go back whenever you start feeling unwell, go back to your routine. And I suck at routines, so usually I don't have any routine, but then it's also easy to go back to something, you know, you can hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, I have two kids. Also, my first pregnancy was when I was hired at Drift, and which was very nice of Ralf and Lonneke that they hired me when I was pregnant. And when you have kids, you also have to find a new way how to balance work and life, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that also then helped me a lot. Okay, you have your kids. And when they need you, you are there. And when it's and you need to go back to that routine whenever needed.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever there's something in work, you can also... Is it
absolutely
clear how I explain that? Yeah.
I think you need to be a parent to understand better. But
yeah. And then you also need to be lucky that they are accepting at your job, of course, how you deal with that.
Yes, and I'm a little bit positively surprised, which is not a good thing. But I'm very happy to hear that it went like this.
Yeah. But it's also, I think, something you do. It's partly something you do yourself. Mm. Because, of course, there are managers or people you work for that are just very difficult. If you say, hey, I have to go home because I have to my kid. And then they just are not cooperative in that. But you also have to just do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I noticed that once you just do things and you don't feel guilty about it, then people also accept it sort of automatically.
Oh, this is how it works.
Yeah, but it's not, of course, it's not in every situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make things that are sometimes very difficult for people sort of simple, because of course, it's not at all like that. But if you have the opportunity and you just do things how you'd want to do it yourself, people are more acceptive than you think they are.
Mm-hmm. Do you care a lot about what others think of what you do, say, and feel?
No, not so much. But I do care that you feel guilty sometimes if you think you didn't do everything you had to do for your job, for example.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
Right?
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned that you're not so well structured.
No.
How did it went in the director's position?
Yeah, I think sometimes hard for people that I have to manage, for sure. Because usually people like structure, except especially from a manager. So that was really something I had to work on.
How did you do this? Well, how did you notice that you're not so structured in the position that you might want or need to?
Yeah, because I just know it from my personal experience that sometimes it's difficult for people that I'm not so structured, and other people like the structure.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that sometimes for studios like Drift, there needs to be a balance, because it shouldn't be too structured, right? Because then it kills the creativity or the making impossible things possible.
As far as I know you, just filling in, I believe you're quite an innovator. You're such a go-getter. You're so in front of what's happening that, okay, maybe the structure is not per se there, but if you have someone around you, that's a killer machine.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's also, of course, from also a coincidence, my career path, that I worked with all these people and I also saw the effect of being innovative and do things in a different way.
Yeah. You strike me exactly as I thought you would be, although I never knew you.
Yeah, we once.
And it's very positive, yeah. Very positive.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, likewise.
So you did some amazing projects at Studio Drift, and the studio grew from 8 to 50. Crazy experience, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And also super valuable.
Yeah, very valuable.
And then you decided, let's go back to Rotterdam and go solo.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, because I think just before I started working for Drift, I already started for 6 months as a freelancer. And it was always my dream to start something for myself, my own company, or something that I can put my own thoughts and ideas into. And then with Drift, after 5 years, I started realizing that if I would stay there, I could stay there for 10 more years and I would still have fun. But then I would be a lot older than I am now to start something new. And also then I would be very much Drift. And it's Ralph and Monica are the creative minds behind Drift, of course. So everything that I do or everything that I think of is from their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So all the ideas that I have are also their ideas, actually, because I think of them from their spirit. And it was always my dream to do that more from my own company. So that's why I wanted to leave at that point and start for myself.
Yeah, because you're now co-curating an art biennale, if I'm correct.
Yeah, well, co-founding, curating, organizing, everything, yeah.
So that's a very personal initiative.
Yeah, and yeah.
Not for someone else, but...
Yeah, this is a dream thing that I'm working on now.
Yeah. And what does it make you feel like my dream is coming true? What elements are in this biennale that you think like, wow?
Well, it's Liv Weisberg, who is the founder of Collectible Art Fair in Brussels and New York and in Huiden Club. So she already, you know, put some cool things on the map, to say like that. And she was thinking about a design biennale in Rotterdam because her experience lays in design. Functional design of like really design, whereas me, I'm more always with art and design. And I think maybe I also learned that work wise I like to work in design more, maybe because it's always or a lot connected to innovation, function, and I like that a lot in my work. And so Liv and I got to know each other. We started talking a lot about what we do, and we had a lot of mutual connections. And then Liv approached me about this idea, and right away I thought like, yeah, this is it. Design, Rotterdam, Biennale is everything that I like and that I think I have the experience for and with. And I can put my own ideas in. I can work with others that I think have good ideas, and to work with Liv, of course, when she has so much experience in setting these things up already.
Smart move.
Yeah.
As in that you are doing this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great.
A lot of stuff is coming together for you.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Yeah. Also, again, and I think Liv is like this in her experience, the same as me. We have 5 more months to organize it, and everybody says, well, that's way too short. And we are like, well, we've done worse. We've done these things in 10 days.
Yeah. And maybe it also depends on what goals you have or when you think it's a success.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea together or for you personally when this biennale has happened, you can call it a success?
Yeah, I think for this first edition, that's not a financial goal. It's a success when because it's for visitors. It's for an audience. So I think it would be a success if we can create projects and exhibitions that a very diverse audience likes a lot, and that is going to be a thing in Rotterdam. That people say, wow, this is new, cool, the future of design and what a biennale should be in this cool city
as
Rotterdam. Yeah.
Yeah, aim high.
Yeah.
Well done.
Then I think Rotterdam is the perfect background for that.
In which way?
Well, it's a city that's about innovation. We're famous for the architects, of course, and the buildings here and how we rebuild the city, but also design is happening in Rotterdam.
Yeah. So I sent you 50 questions.
Yeah.
I think we touched 4 or 5. The first question that I had, who are you without art?
Maybe boring.
I wouldn't think so, but...
Yeah, without art.
Why art? Why not sports? Or?
Well, it could be sports with me because I did a lot of sport when I was younger. When I was younger, I was not at all somebody who would draw a lot or create art. I'm also way too impatient for that. But I think I come from a very artistic family. My mom is a journalist, but a writer. My uncle is an artist. My other aunts are musicians. So it's how I grew up. And I think when I got older, I think I always needed that part that is art. It can be books, or it can be literature, or a painting, or a chair, or a building, right? And that's what I think now of art. It's maybe not art, but it's sort of
craftsmanship.
Yeah, I don't think it's even about the craftsmanship. It's just a way of how you approach life and how you see things, or how you discuss things even with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if everything would have been different, I would be a lawyer. But then I think still in my personal life, family, friends, everything, art would still play a big role, because it's just there. It's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of how we've looked at the world or discussed the world, I think. That's why I name all these other disciplines like architecture, and because there's always also a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see now my son is 5, he's in a school that's using art a lot to teach them things. Also, they do a lot of drawing, but they have also philosophy, or they already look at architecture. And I think this is something that also my parents or my uncle did when I grew up.
Do you see a lot of resemblance?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, I think an interesting way of that you... I think I'm also lucky that I could grow up like that.
How has parenthood changed you?
Oh, very much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Some structure.
Structure. Oh, unfortunately, not so much. But, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's... I think I'm much kinder after.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How can you tell?
Yeah, it's just something internally. I think when I became a parent, it was very natural for me. And nobody expected that, but I'm very good at it. And it's very natural. And it just gave me a lot of rest inside, I think.
Yeah. More patient.
More patient. Everything is good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When I have the kids and you go home and you go back to the kids, it's just everything is fine.
And in the beginning when you... Because through all the years, whatever you did, it seems like you had a lot of ambition and go-getting attitude. When you become a parent, how did you have this talk with yourself and maybe also with your partner about the ambitions that you have had,
yeah,
and the approach and the mentality, and then you have a whole different life.
Yeah.
How do you combine this with yourself in your mind that a lot of things are different? Was it for you maybe very easy because you become a mom, or did you had to manage quite a lot of thoughts like, hey, but yeah, I can't do this anymore, or that one?
Yeah, no, it was very easy actually, because also, I think my partner is super easygoing in this. He would never say, hey, you cannot do that because we have kids. Or
men shouldn't.
Yeah. So, we're both supportive to each other. But I also am very lucky with my support system, I think. When I got the kids, I was living at underneath my best friend, next to her sister that I know almost my whole life. and their dad lived underneath us. And so I was living in sort of a friend situation. And they also didn't have kids, know nothing about kids, but they sort of learned everything with me together.
Yeah.
My sister lived not too far. So
I
was super lucky with all these people around me that helped out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I moved back to Rotterdam, my mom is here, my dad is here, my cousins, uncle are here. So I think the support system helps a lot. My mom does a lot. So when I need to travel, my mom is always there. And yeah, the only thing is the traveling that's sometimes difficult. And yeah, that you have the same thing probably. You never want to be away longer than 5 days. So it's just short trips. But also the travel, I think, makes it also more easy maybe to... because when you go back home, it's very nice to be home.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that if you're always at home, it starts to get a little bit boring. But if you have the travel in between, as I went to Hong Kong last week. It's fine if I am home for a month now and don't do anything.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a little bit different.
Yeah.
I can stay at home for quite a long time. And I also learned that traveling is nice, but it also takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And so mostly I skipped and I gave the chance to people who never made a trip or whatsoever. But what a great support system.
That's everything.
Yeah. I don't have it.
but it's very different, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's quite some pressure and juggling with your ambitions. But I don't need 5 days to remind myself of, and you not as well. So it's not a comment.
No, but I understand what you mean. But for me, that traveling is important, I think.
Yes, it is. In many cases, it is.
Yeah, because I can also imagine you're very different, that you don't need that sort of stepping out of the comfort. For me, if I don't have that travel or exciting project that gives me something, then it's just something I need.
Yes, I know. I don't personally have it, but I know you have it.
Yeah.
And it's also sometimes that I think of myself, should I have more of that? But I've seen a lot of the world already, so it's, I'm lucky in that.
Yeah, that helps. That you already have some satisfied.
I think I'm more the person behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So I love working with a lot of people. But for instance, hypothetically, if we would work together, I would always say to you, like, we go together or you go.
Yeah.
And I'll do the stuff that is needed.
Yeah.
But that's why I like to talk with you about all the stuff that you do, because somehow you're also a little bit to me. But the question is also, do you see yourself as a personal brand?
Yeah, maybe. I think I was always more that I was behind the scenes. But I think now, with a desire to also become more a personal brand, so that's probably why I started for myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel the need to be more in the picture? And
Not so much in the picture, but I do realize that to do projects that I like, for example, being in this podcast, I really like to have these conversations. But to be in there, you have to become your sort of own personal brands, right? Maybe not
for me personally,
for you, for this podcast, but to do...
Absolutely. Because I'm probably the only one who is not focusing on reach and amounts of listeners and such. But of course, I ask you because there are elements within your personality and your
doing
that I find fascinating for others to hear about.
And you're different. But for Drift, I also did some talks and panels, and I really like that. And I don't like that to, you know, become, to be in the spotlight, but just to talk, I think, and to do these things. And
I believe you were and still will be a great ambassador for Studio Drift and whatever company or artist you work for.
Thank you.
Okay, enough for the compliments today. Yeah. 10 years ago, you mentioned, not my words, that your hair was your trademark. Is this still true?
I sort of remember this. I think for appearance-wise, maybe yes, because I always had a lot of hair. But I, you know what? I worked for this marketing company, and then you start to get in these fashion magazines like Grazia.
I found it quite fascinating.
Yeah, and then, but then they always ask you questions so that they frame it that you have to answer in a way, because they say, what is your trademark appearance-wise? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but if it's something, then it's probably my hair, because I just have a lot of hair.
How far am I away from the questions they ask?
Very far.
Okay. Just want some verification.
Yeah, no, I once was in this interview and they asked me, do you like how Kim Kardashian dresses her kid?
Oh,
and then I was like,
I read it.
Yeah, probably. And then they, you know, they put it in the interview like I started about that myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I always find this a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
That's why I don't per se need to be in the attest.
No.
Knowing how it goes.
No.
So, personal brands, you also had a store.
Yeah.
This one I love. I love the title. Almost Not Done.
Yeah.
It's when I thought about how am I going to name the company, many times this name resonated with me. If I say Almost Not Done, what are the feelings and thoughts that pop up first in your mind?
Yeah, it's I cannot take credit for it because Jeff, my, I never know what to call him, partner, boyfriend, father.
But lover, whatever
Jeff,
you
want. Whatever. he founded the store together with me and he named it Almost Not Done because he wanted to have something that was always in construction. Mm-hmm. He always said 1% done, 90%, 99% in progress.
Great approach.
Yeah.
Great name.
And that I think we always explain it like that as well, that that's was also related to Rotterdam, where we're both from. Because here it's always like that in progress. Mm-hmm. We're still building.
Did you feel a little bit like a Trojan horse having such a store in Amsterdam?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit what Almost Not Done did as a concept store?
Yeah, we did a lot because in the beginning we also had design and art. But the core business, I think, was secondhand clothing. And it was brands like Raf Simons, Margiela. But then in that time, they called Resell. You also had Supreme and those kind of brands. Mm-hmm. So now there's a lot. But then when the store came, it was mainly in the America that they already had a lot of these type of stores. And it was all about Resell.
What did you like about having such a store? What did it do to you with both this?
The place was very nice in the middle of Amsterdam in the city in the Beulingstraat, a street where there were no cars. It was sometimes hard because there were no people just walking by. But therefore, you start a community with people that are very like-minded, that like the same things. And so when people Google Raf Simons, Margiela, Amsterdam, and you find this store, you know what kind of people you get, right? Because
probably not me.
Well, maybe
although I
you
would
as
have
well.
Loved to have been in the store.
But no, you get the people that, and it can be any age. There were a lot of young kids there, but also older people, and they just really like the same things.
How important is fashion for you?
Very. Weirdly enough, but
why would
I don't know. I didn't grow up in a fashion house or that I cared a lot about fashion. I think also maybe when I started working for Marga Wijmans, who was a fashion designer, she knew a lot about fashion. And then I started finding out about these Belgian brands through her, like Margiela Dries. And Margiela is, I think,
Super.
Yeah, it's, I like that the most in the world from everything.
As in, I don't wear the clothes, but I think I've just saw almost every fashion documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so good.
As in, I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, I like Margiela more probably than every artist or designer.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. It just resonates with me. The style, the aesthetics, the concept behind it is just cool. So cool.
Mm-hmm. Are you cool?
No, not so cool.
I'm not cool, I know.
Well, you are. No? You have this podcast. That's very cool.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
Now, if I am cool, then you are cool too.
Okay. So, okay. Then if you said it, then I can say that tonight at home as well.
Yeah.
So you ran the store with your partner, with Jeff. How important is Jeff to you?
Very. Yeah, we are always going in the same direction together.
Mm-hmm. So I can imagine that the life partner is important.
But yeah.
What is it that you... Are you the same or quite the opposite? How does it work together?
Yeah, we're opposite, I think. I think what Jeff has very big dreams. And he takes everyone around him in his dreams.
Oh.
So when you live with Jeff, mm-hmm. it's always it sort of realizing a dream. And it's very nice to...
I would love to meet Jeff.
Yeah, but to live in this, in his world. Mm. It's, you know, Jeff is more than me, not structured. He's not a normal person, but... He is in some way, but he's also sort of maybe delusional in some way in his dreams or what he wants, what he likes. But he's very unique and exciting to live in his dreams, I think.
I can imagine if you nurture such a mind quite well.
Yeah.
This is going big.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened with you to me when he said, I want to do a store, concept store, almost not done?
Yeah, I thought it was very nice because for Jeff, he always likes to, I think he's a musician at first, but he's not the best in putting his work out there. He makes stuff, but then the next step is difficult for him. So I thought, wow, this story is amazing because then you start to learn how to do business as well.
Mm-hmm. And this I find... fascinating because if there's someone who knows how to put things out, then it's you.
Yeah.
But it's so close.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too close then maybe as well.
Yeah. Did you ever have talks about this? As in that you might know how to, but there's this border of being partners and not able to do it?
Yeah, every day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds familiar.
Yeah.
You said that Jeff is maybe not personally very normal. There's a quote about you. Also, your words, not mine. In 2017, you described yourself as, I'm not strange. I'm just not normal.
Oh, yeah? Where?
Why? And do you still see yourself like this? And maybe the why you don't know, but do you still see yourself like this quote?
Yeah. Well, it's always a little bit, you know, sort of that you say, you find yourself very interesting to say that you're crazy, but I don't want to put it like that. But I think what I also, both my parents, they're not... It was always different from what we think of as normal. I think there are a lot of people who are not normal. But when you think like, okay, you have my desire from when I was 13 was to have a normal household, you know? And for me, then normal was not books everywhere in your house and to have normal furniture with not weird things everywhere. And that your parents would have normal clothes, a normal car. And I don't know what normal then is.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are more people, of course, that are similar to me. But I think, and now I like it when everything is not so normal.
When you look around in my place, how different is it from your place? And could you ever live in such a place?
Yeah, for sure.
Because to describe it, it's static. Maybe that's a good word. And homey.
Yeah.
When I saw the photos on your Instagram, because they're public, I looked at it and I was like, oh yeah, no, that's way different from when I see it. But
your house is not so.
No, it's.
You have an apartment in. It's not like Phoenixwijk.
No, then I would die. Yeah. No, I come from a village with 7,000 people.
Yeah,
quite a intense community. I could never do that again.
Yeah,
no. So that the housing prices in Rotterdam went skyrocket was not a good sign.
No.
You're now on your own. Super cool. And you work with artists such as Boris Eckert, Jonathan Price, Frederik Molenschot.
Yeah.
And you also work with institutes like Bureau Stedelijk.
Yeah.
Why do you think they come to you?
I think because, well, a lot of it thanks to Drift, because everybody knows what kind of projects I did there and how well it went, of course. So,
did it always went well?
Well, the end result, yeah, for sure.
This is me teasing. You don't need to.
No, but everybody can see the success of Drift. It was a massive success worldwide. But then I think also why I work with these people and why they want to work with me is that they have a goal. You want something to do exhibitions worldwide, for example.
That's a big goal.
Yeah, for Boris Eckert to show his projects worldwide, for Frederik Molenschot to expand from the design, sort of iconic design works he already have, to more artworks, exhibiting that worldwide, creating maybe exhibitions and projects himself. And I think in me, they find a person to do that together with them, next to them. Because you need usually a partner in something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Rita, who was a founding curator for Bureau Stedelijk, she was also looking for somebody who could help her more on the marketing, positioning aspect, and found a partner in me with that.
What did it do to you when people like them reached out to you? How did it make you feel?
I was very happy, of course, because it's nice when you start for yourself that it also actually works.
Yeah, and also referring a little bit that in the beginning of this conversation you mentioned I fucked up on high school.
Yeah.
Which I can also imagine. You were just young.
Yeah.
Finding yourself, which you also described.
Yeah.
So is it also a little bit of a confirmation about your personality and identity, like I'm not fucking up now by pushing and continuously go-getting. This is also a way that works for me.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think so. And I also became, you probably have that as well. If you have a lot of experience, you become very confident about what you do. I know that I can, certain things I cannot do, but I know very well what I can do. So I think when you have this confidence, then that also has an effect to other people. And they also get this confidence in that you can do what.
Yes, I'm not so easily stressed.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel the same with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Every question that I ask, you're quite comfortable.
Yeah.
What do you believe? Maybe you already mentioned something that you're very good at, that you're quite calm with every situation. What are your Can you name one thing that you would like to improve? Or that you're now already trying to be more?
Yeah, what I'm working on a lot to improve is to structure, I think.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's a good example.
Yeah, going back to this all the time, and I don't want it too much, but I think when you find out what you're not good at, it's very nice to know this because then you can work on it.
How do you do this with these high-end clients, artists?
Yeah.
How do you work with them knowing that you're the sole sparring partner?
Yeah.
That you might not have so much structure, but that they still believe in you. And this is not like trying to figure out how you do, but maybe for other people who feel so related to you or the situation, and because there's so much power in what you do, that still, that if you acknowledge, well, structure is not per se my thing, that people still believe in you, but you have so much other stuff to give. How do you balance this with those people?
I think, well, also, again, I'm fortunate that I do what I know I can do. I've done things in the past and you just miss experience or knowledge, right? And for these things that I do now, I just know I can. And I'm also, it's sort of a niche. They're not a lot of people that do the same things that we do, right?
So yes.
Then you're also, again, lucky because there's not a lot of competition in what you do. But I really live this work. I read everything about it. Mm-hmm. I see everything. I make sure that I see and know everything about exhibition. I'm also lucky in a way that you see art, design, fashion, architecture is moving a lot towards each other. And I know a little bit about every discipline. But the confidence to know about this helps me a lot to work with this client and to make also sure that they get the results that they want. And then in myself, I just do a lot to make sure that I don't forget to also give them structure. I'm very bad at reporting, for example. But I learned that people like reporting because otherwise they have no idea what's happening. I know what's happening because I just know it. But the artist is also working on his or her own thing. And people like updates, you know, they just like it. So I have to tell myself every time, okay, give them an update, for example. But this is something that doesn't go natural, but when you learn it from experience, you just learn it.
Maybe working at Ivy Lee and the corporate brands
helped quite as well. Yeah, you know, Dex, for example, brand Dex, or for me, it always feels a little bit like, why would you do this? You just explain what you do and people get it or they don't get it. But it's so important to make this Dex and make it look perfect, have the font all in the same style, have it centered, because
for people who don't know what a deck is, can you explain what a deck is?
A deck is a presentation in which you present your project, your plan, or it goes with text and pictures usually a lot. And from my core, I think it's bullshit to have all the fonts in the same style because I think, okay, it's just the information I need to give you and you need to get the information. But it's actually super important because it's the impression you make of people and the way you convince them to believe in your project or to go along with your project. So it's just something that doesn't come natural to me. But what I learned in the years is how important it is to make a very good deck.
But somehow I also believe that you're quite an all-rounder, because seeing all the pictures, knowing a little bit by heart how these projects go, which you did at Roosgaarde, Drift, now, you're a people's person. And I think, this is my assumption, but I think it doesn't take you a lot of time and energy to express who you are, what you stand for, and how you can help others.
Yeah.
So if you might not fully like Dex, then this is a part where you excel quite a lot more than other people.
Yeah.
Is this something that comes natural, or did you also learn this into did you ever have a mentor or someone who is an inspiration to you?
Well, many, I think. My parents at first is a little bit awkward.
Let's start with the list. Yes, okay.
I want to say thank you to my parents. No. But
what do they mean to you? What? Why are they an inspiration?
Well, somebody was. You are that as well, right? A coach to people, mm-hmm. to give them advice and as a reflection board or. Mm-hmm. But I don't need it because I have my mom. And she, I think when we grew up, we also in Rotterdam, it's not even just my parents, you just, your friends or everyone you surround yourself with is from different backgrounds or they do different things. So then you learn to communicate with a lot of different people, which helps a lot, I think, in your career.
And with yourself.
And with yourself. And what was the question again? How do you?
Why are they an inspiration to you?
Oh, my parents.
Yes.
Yeah, because both they have very good careers. They're super smart. They know a lot. And yeah, they just have fun in life as well. I think maybe that's the most important thing.
Oh, I think you have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who else?
I have worked with a lot of inspiring people, actually. Marga Wijmans at first, because she has so much knowledge.
Mm.
And she has less structure than me, and she's all over the place, but it's very inspiring to work with somebody who knows about everything. And that also, I think, inspired me to read every magazine book there is about the field that you work in. And then I worked with Leroy Asnam, who was a big inspiration for me at the marketing agency, because he knows very well how to communicate with people and everybody likes him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so likable as Leroy, for example. He's very kind. I think that's also an inspiration, right? Just to be kind.
You're kind.
No, I'm kind, but I became kinder, I think. It's good to be just kind to everyone when you work with them. And Dan was an inspiration for me how to think and do without limits, right? Mm-hmm. You experienced that maybe yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rolf is also similar to that. Rolf from Studio Drift. I think.
But did you ever had a mentor, like someone who actually sits down with you and talks about what's going on with you or where you want to go or personal development? Or?
Well, not a paid mentor, but I have my mom for that. Oh, mom. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think. I also is different, but with my kids, for example, with Drift, all the people that I worked with always said, well, sometimes you forget that you have kids because you never talk about it or you don't show pictures all the time or you never go away for your kids, that we notice that. And that's not at all because I don't want to talk about my kids. That's the most important thing in my life. So I could talk about it all day, but I don't have to because I have my mom. That I can call every morning to tell every little detail that the kids did. I can also tell to Jeff. But so I'm lucky that I have that already, you know. And then you can sort of or everything that's happening at work, I can discuss with my mom. And then it's when you can have a conversation about it. It's usually solved quickly.
Yeah.
So I think if people don't have that, then you can benefit a lot from a coach to talk to, because you need somebody to reflect on your thoughts, right?
Yes.
You probably help a lot of people with that as well.
Yeah. So, why I started is because I had a mom who did exactly the same like you, but she passed away. And then I found out through the hard way what your own value is as a person.
Yeah, that I can imagine that.
And then basically that you, because you were so lucky, because so many people don't have that luck, that you want to share a little bit. It's very cliche.
Yeah.
It's not that I gain a lot from it. I don't need to fill an empty hole. But to see others struggle with themselves and not reach their potential, that's after 7 years why I started this.
Yeah.
But I'm super happy for you. It's so nice. And also that you, if we talk about structure so much during this conversation,
yeah.
I'm super happy for you that you can reach your potential and that others see this during Drift, because you have such a strong center point.
Yeah.
And also the support system around it.
Yeah.
And it's also not that I'm jealous or should be, because you also organize this yourself. You make the decision for yourself that you want to share this with your closest one, because you can also say to yourself, I'm a mother or a parent, I do this myself. And
yeah.
So it's also a lot of self-knowledge, which you already did quite a lot in the past.
Yeah, I think it's both. It's also luck and you realize also when you see now the world, how it's going, what luck you have to have this world here. So yeah, I think most of it is luck, and then you have to just use your luck, I think.
Well, you do it well.
Yeah.
Is there someone or something that inspires you, which is not close to you in the world, like an artist?
Yeah, I think because we just mentioned it, it's Margiela, the designer and artist. Because for mainly aesthetic-wise, I look at that for everything. And yeah, it just has something. And you have Comme des Garçons, Raquel Kubo, that are in the similar. So I look at that a lot. Or Raf Simons, Miuccia Prada. Maybe the fashion designers actually inspire me the most. Because
me as well.
Also not aesthetics-wise necessarily, but I think also Virgil Abloh changed a lot for me and how I think of design or art. Or
how what did he spark in you?
I think he just had a way of thinking and framing things that are very defining as well for our generation, maybe. And also maybe sort of connected all these disciplines, art, and it just resonated with me and a lot of people, I think.
And it feels a little bit like you're doing the same ish, different scale.
Yeah, different scale. I think also unintentionally, I use a lot of that of how Virgil. Because he was a designer, but also a marketing guy, of course. And I use a lot of that in my work, probably.
So when you were working at Ivy Lee, you noticed that you were asked for interviews to talk about yourself, and they portrayed you, or people saw you as an influencer. You don't see yourself so, but well, doing the research, I noticed. Then you are aware of the fact that you're becoming or already are a bit of a personal brand, and that it's helpful Do you feel you're a little bit responsible for this generation or the next, or that you are inspiring others for some way? If there's someone you inspire, it's me.
Because that's great.
Otherwise, I didn't ask.
Yeah.
But do you think about this sometimes, or a lot, or not?
Yeah, actually, maybe a lot. Well, not all the time, but I do feel, and I think mainly because also others inspired me a lot about that, is how our generation behaves. And that the generation before us, it was very much competition and, you know, pushing people to the max. And I think that we have to find a balance in that. So to still be able to push things to the best that they can be, but then in a different setting or vibe, mm-hmm. or just to collaborate, not see people as competition, but collaborators, to communicate in a kind way instead of arrogant, pushing way. And I think we're finding ways to, in this generation, to find cultures in work situation that are different than the other generation.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, I feel responsible. I think you too, in what you do work-wise, to
absolutely
set certain standards for how work culture should be.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think you can still become or still create companies and businesses that push people, but just in a different way than having 50% of your team in a burnout.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I started Don't Waste That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do some do or die questions.
Yeah.
Are you more rational or emotional?
Both.
Why did you hesitate?
Yeah, because I'm very rational, but I also see with my kids that I'm more emotional, actually.
Yeah, but that's
yeah. And it also helps a lot, I think.
Yeah, in which way?
Yeah, to just do things from your feelings that rather
become
than
more friendly.
Yeah, become more friendly.
Are you more on strategy or intuition?
Strategy. Because I like to, from intuition probably, but also from knowledge, to create a strategy and then work from that.
Good answer.
Yeah.
As in, every answer is good, but yeah. I like that. Work independently on all your projects or always collaborate with a team?
Collaborate with a team.
That was a quick
one. Yeah, no, I like to work with people. And even when I work now for myself, I work very closely with the artists or curators that I work with, so then it's still a team.
Could you ever do it only on your own?
No.
Travel the world and get international recognition for your work, but see your family only once or twice per year. Maybe this is an easy one. Or have a balanced family life, but limited professional recognition.
Yeah, the last. But I don't have to make this choice.
No, of luckily. Course not. Yeah. You won't come decided out of the
I
door.
If I have to make a choice, then yeah.
Build a long-term relationship with all the artists and clients, or constantly seek new, fresh collaborations?
No, the long-term relationships.
Take on high-stakes, high-pressure projects or several smaller, low-stress collaborations?
High-stress.
I know. Oh, yeah. I find this interesting. Why?
Yeah, because I like I need it also, the stress. And I also worked on fashion shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very short, the fashion mm-hmm. time, right? It's 6 months or sometimes even. And I like that actually the best, just to be very quick to work on a project.
I ask myself all these questions as well, just to resonate if it works for you. This question, I was surprised to have answered in the same way as you.
Yeah.
After all the things that you and I did, I was searching for more rest and calmness. Got the question, I was like, no.
Right? But you need that. But maybe it also, it's not only about rest and calmness, right?
It's it's about the level you're acting on. And well, basically the summary is, who am I and what can I do?
Yeah.
Where is my, I don't know, there's no end level, but how much potential is within me?
Yeah. Yeah. What drives you, maybe?
Become the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
Design a strategy for an iconic cultural institution or develop a brand for an innovative startup?
Wow, difficult.
I didn't say it was easy.
No. Yeah, I'm leaning more towards the strategy for the cultural institution. But I don't know why. It's because startup, I think of
tech
horrible guys that are setting this up.
It was more focused on, for instance, a fashion brand that is starting right now.
Yeah, I can imagine that's also cool, but I'm leaning more towards the cultural institution.
And why?
It's for some reason.
Next question.
Yeah, I think they have more interesting projects, maybe. Mm. Startup is also very money driven, usually, right? And I wish I would be more money driven, but
it could be there different angles.
Yeah,
it's much about scaling up.
Yeah.
Help artists execute their wildest ideas, or focus on building brands that impact communities. We're almost done.
Yeah. The now I think then I thought the wildest dreams, but I think the impact communities, because it's usually much nicer when a project has meaning, right? Than if it's just some. Yeah, artists can also have ego ideas that are. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily what is nice to work on for when you work besides them. So I think then the community impact is always, it gives you a lot of, how do you say that?
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction, yeah.
Constantly evolve and adapt your skills or master one specific area of expertise.
Well, sometimes I wish I would master one specific expertise, because I think it would create a lot of clearness for. But now I realize I just don't have that, and I do a lot of different things, and I like it as well.
Yes, and I remember that we called each other half a year ago, and I asked, "What are you doing?" And you described what you did, and I was like, that's exactly what my answer will be.
But I think you are one of the few people that exactly understands that.
Yeah,
mutual. Because it's all, for a lot of people, it's also, but what do you do? It's nothing.
So are everything. And, but I also know that there are still a lot of people out there, hopefully listening, that are also trying everything, but don't see the red line that combines everything together.
Yeah.
What would you say to those people who are trying to find what you are?
Yeah, well, I used to find it a little bit stupid because it's so cliche, you know, but I look at interviews a lot from people that I look up to now, and there you get a lot of information that so like this actually, like,
thank you.
But it's true that you get a lot of confirmation how you can define who you are and what you do yourself. So this is a guy who gotten very popular lately, Rick Rubin, who is also not very clear in what he does, but he just says, well, I cannot explain in three words what I do, but I just have a lot of confidence in my taste, and then I help people with that.
Such a good example.
Right? And then I thought, oh, yeah, that's similar to how I can explain what I do.
Me as well.
Right?
Yeah.
So it helps to see a lot from that from other people, and then you can define that for yourself.
Yeah. That's a super good example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you, just for the record, explain who he is?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. No, well, it's not to explain.
Maybe I should do it myself.
No, but he's from a music background, and he works as a music producer in a studio with a lot of musicians.
The biggest names from Dr. Dre to
Kanye
Adele.
Yeah.
And he basically, you come into the production house, producer house, and he just lays on the couch, listens to the music. And he will say, change this and that, but he can't explain why.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have a hit.
Yeah, and I thought also how he said, oh yeah, his taste does so. And I liked it a lot when I left Drift, and then I started to speak to Ralph and Monica, like, what do you think are my biggest values? And then I was kind of scared for it, because you don't want them to say something that you don't agree with, right? Because then you think, oh shit, this is it, where I'm good at, and I don't want to be good at that. But then Lonneke said that for her it was my ideas and knowledge of the... And I think then she didn't say taste, but I think she also meant it to push people in a certain direction.
Yeah.
And be sort of their Rick Rubin in a way. And I think that's also maybe because why he got so popular, because he can explain very well what he does and what people like us do as well, and how that's very beneficial for somebody.
Do you have the same approach like Rick Rubin?
Yeah, in some ways. I think, yeah, you and I both have that, right? You are... In some projects, not, because then is more leaning towards marketing and communications. But I think when I work very closely with an artist, that's what I like the most.
How do you do it? You don't need to reveal secrets or whatsoever. But how if you sit down with an artist and he explains to you, I want to conquer the world.
Yeah,
hang in every gallery. What goes on in your mind?
Yeah, I think you have to know the world and also the world that they want to be in. So I like to look at Van Gogh paintings, but that's not my world. That's not the art world that I know everything about, you know? So I think the artists or the designers that I work with are in the field that I read and see everything about. So when they say, yeah, we want to conquer the world, and I see the kind of work they make, I can say, wow, you have to be in this place. Or this is the curator you have to work with, because that's the next thing. Or your picture should look like this, because that's how it will. And then you just need that taste and knowledge, I think.
Mm-hmm. Are you good at multitasking, or is there something you don't do?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah. Because a lot of people are overwhelmed by multitasking.
Yeah.
And in more interviews that are... read in the past years, multitasking is something that leads to burnouts and such.
Yeah.
I had a burnout twice, but that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I also liked still the multitasking.
Yeah.
And I found a way for myself to deal with it.
Yeah. But do you think usually burnouts are because of the workload, or because of the mental situation that people create?
Lost.
Right? I think it's never about the multitasking. It's about what...
I think you're a good interviewer.
Yeah.
The roles have changed. To answer your question, which is very valid and important, I don't believe I got the burnout because I did too much multitasking, worked hard, but it was from the disappointments of the potential that I saw and others declined following because of most stupid reasons or ignorance or ego.
Yeah.
But okay.
Women are better in multitasking.
I won't deny them. Last one for the do or die, and then I'll leave you to it. Grow your consultancy into a global firm or keep it small and intimate with selective projects?
Yeah, grow it globally, but still intimate. I would never want to concern with 100 people work for me, but I would love to do the biggest projects in the world.
And what is defined a big project? Is that something what you did in Trift?
Yeah, bigger, it could be. It's smaller. Like everything. It could be this design biennale that we're setting up in Rotterdam, but it could also be that we're working with three artists from the Netherlands and we can do a big project in Saudi Arabia, for example, for outside or that that you can get an artist to do a solo exhibition at the MoMA or something.
So you worked a lot at places where people in leadership positions asked you or demanded you to come out of your comfort zone and do big things for them. Now you're talking about your bigger projects or dreams. How much does it help to have a partner who always dreams big?
Yeah, it helps a lot.
In which way?
Yeah, because then you're also every day again motivated to do that. It's just a living situation, right? Because people are trained, I think, in a way, and that's where you hold on to. So I'm trained in this way, but if you work for owls your whole life, it must have an effect on how you live in a way that's more, or for the government even. You see it as well for people that work in the government system, right? It's very hard to still, and some people, they still manage, but to look outside these structures that are created for you to live and work in.
Are there things that you lay awake from at night? Because you're quite rational, you mentioned.
Yeah, sometimes, but it's not one thing that I can mention. It's different.
But just in general, do you lay awake and how do you deal with it? Do you have tips, tricks?
Yeah, I read. That helps. If you have to go to bed, I also watch stupid real estate Netflix shows.
Why? This is quite corporate.
Yeah, no, but you have all these real estate where you see houses, very expensive houses. And it
is this dreaming big?
Something stupid. Oh. Dreaming big, yeah.
Okay.
My father says always that we are a little bit superficial. And I think he's right. And I am also superficial because I also like these stupid shows. And sometimes I like to read the entertainment page of the Telegraph, then just make life simple.
Oh, maybe it should.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for today.
No, thank you. It's very nice.
Of all the guests that I invited to join, this one for me was a little bit more special.
Yeah. Similar.
Yes, similar, because I didn't know you and I'm a fan. So if there's someone out there who thinks it's fun, you're not alone. And also for you. And it's more also because I see so much potential in you. And all the challenges you overcame through the work that I know what you needed to do for it.
Yeah.
Next to parenthood, then only finding yourself, starting for yourself, and all the praise that you got as well. I sincerely hope that you just continue what you're doing.
Thank you.
And my message to you.
Yeah, no, thank you a lot. I think it's also so nice because we love to speak to somebody who's doing the same, right? And when we were talking earlier about what our generation, I think I have a group of friends and women that I also only got to know because they're doing the same work as I. And then I see that when we meet each other and we really like to speak about what your work situations are, how you're dealing with some stuff. And I think, yeah, that's very nice of this how our generation works. And
thank you.
No, thank you.
That was my conversation with Sarah. Her story reminds us that success doesn't follow a straight path. It's about embracing uncertainty, trusting yourself, and finding growth in unexpected places. As Sarah shared, it's about being true to who you are, speaking your vision out loud, and not being afraid to step out of your comfort zone. Whether you're an artist, designer, or simply looking to find your potential, her advice is clear. Keep moving forward, stay authentic, and always make room for growth. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter, and spread the word, so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.